Okay, we are on the internet on our Monday night call and on our conference call. This is Winfrey, and we'll start out. I'd just like to greet some of the people that are on the conference call line just a moment. Okay, if I sound like I'm halfway here, it's probably true because yesterday we did, I did two events. In Carlsbad, so I'm recovering. So let me get my energy up and say, let me check in the people on the conference line. Who is on the West Coast? I'd like to say their name in the city.
I'm Beth from Escondido.
Oh, I got everybody at once. I heard Escondido. Who was that from Escondido?
Celeste.
Celeste, you just got my email, right?
Yes, right.
Okay, and who else is on?
And Beth from El Segundo.
And Beth from El Segundo. See that? You know what? There must be something about the L cities, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
No, wait, the S cities, the Escondido.
S and L.
Right. And anyone else like to say hello? This is Lynn.
This is Sandy in Cottonwood.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Sandy, you're becoming like an old friend.
Well, good.
And who else is on the line?
Emmy Tucson.
Hi, Emmy.
Hi.
I saw your daughter yesterday.
That's nice. Which, okay, I almost asked you which one. There's only one in California.
Marianne came to my event and helped with it.
Oh.
And who else? Like to say their name in the city.
Francis in Concord, California.
Hi, Francis.
Hi, Lynn.
And is there anyone else there? That's it, huh? Okay. So this is the conference call line in BBS Radio, and everybody probably knows that I'm beat today, so they're not listening, and that's okay. You know what? The first thing about being human is being human, which means being where you are in the moment. And I know I can go through long periods of my life where I would always want to make an impression, and God, if I wasn't feeling totally up to snuff, I would have to say, hi, guys, this is Winfrey. and maybe nobody would notice that I was tired or exhausted. You guys don't do that, do you, ever?
Mm-mm. Never.
Never. I heard somebody, oh, they're coming in. This is Winn. Would you like to say your name and your city?
Hello, it's Marianne and Julie Vissa.
Marianne, we were just talking about you.
Oh.
Hi, Mayane.
Hello.
that's Emmy's daughter, Marianne.
And this is Alan in Sedona.
And Alan in Sedona. Hi, Alan.
David in Sedona.
And David in Sedona.
Gwen, where are you? You're in California or Arizona?
I mean, where's my body or where's my energy?
Your body.
My body is in California.
Okay.
You know, I did another event yesterday in San Diego.
Yeah. Oh, wow, cool.
Okay. So, I stayed. And who else is on the line? Anyone else? Where's Terry? Is Terry on the line? Celeste, you see, this is not a regular radio show. This is like a bunch of people just showing up, and they don't have to get dressed. Well, I won't say they don't have to get dressed, but they let their hair down. And then we talk about anything and everything, and usually we stumble into something interesting, but it's not because it was prepared. And did you guys like Carla Ruckert last week?
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, David, What did you learn from my talk with Carla Rucker?
That's a good question because it's been a week ago.
Exactly.
Oh.
But her impressions from years ago and you know, how everything syncs with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. For those that are listening that are not aware of Carla Rucker, she channeled the raw material in 1981, and she has 5 books of her channeled material on the raw material, and she's probably one of the most unknown / celebrated channels on the planet. And so many people that have studied the raw material have come away with this new understanding of how the cosmos works. And, of course, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce quoted her material over and over again. And for those people that get the reincarnation online, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce online, we include the 2 PDF copies of Carla Ruckert's raw channelings of the first 2 of her books, because you'll want to read them after you read The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, because they're referred to so much. So this call has been an ongoing experiment. And, you know, when people first come into all of this,
all callers are muted.
Perhaps what I would call, it's kind of a new spirituality. It's a new way of looking at things and understanding how those energies and intelligences on the other side actually work. And at first, it's like the curiosity factor is, so what does Ra have to say, and what does the Elohim have to say? And the mind is like pursuing it and wants to hear how we look from their point of view and how they interact with us, because it's a rare glimpse. And if you take into consideration that they actually are who they say they are, then you are now listening to a voice, an intelligence, that has observed the human condition over many lifetimes and does not see us as we see ourselves, as this body on planet Earth with the challenges of getting through this particular lifetime, but they see us as a body that's attached to an energy that goes on for maybe 1,000 lifetimes, and they can look at all the track of all those lifetimes, and they look at the track of the energy, and they can see how the energy changes and grows or contracts over many, many lifetimes. And so it's kind of a rare view to find an intelligence that can actually talk to you that has that kind of perspective. And, of course, if the energy that they're observing, that they're able to see, is in fact evolving, then they are in a position to give us some really good guidance and help as to helping that energy evolve. Because there's data here that a human just can't know for themselves. They just can't know it. None of us, especially me, can remember our previous lifetimes. Let me just say, there are people that say they can, and they go into regression, and they bring it up, but I'm not sure what the experience of memory is for that person. Because it's certainly, you can recreate all the circumstances, but I don't have that experience. To me, even though I know some of my past lives through circumstances, I have absolutely no memory of anything that happened in those lifetimes, although I can feel a resonance. And seeing and feeling a resonance that goes through many lifetimes is an interesting learning experience in of itself. But sometimes people want to know their past lives, and it's a curiosity factor, and that is not necessarily a help to your evolution. It could be actually a distraction, because then you start thinking of who you were, and you start contemplating that, and now you're recreating those thoughts in this lifetime, as opposed to getting immersed in your own life. So here we have these energies that are observing us and connected with us over many, many lifetimes and speaking to us and, of course, explaining that this particular lifetime we're in has different ramifications than our other lifetimes. And the different ramifications are that, of course, we're in what they call a dimensional shift. So, whereas in other lifetimes, and I think I've got this accurate, but there is possibility that it could be slightly different than I'm saying it. Because I'm kind of saying this particular lifetime we're in might be the last lifetime we're going to have in this realm, in this way. And that's not a quote. That's not something that they said, and I'm quoting it. That's something that seems to be an underlying kind of premise in many of the conversations, although, through Carla Ruckert, they said this particular period, it was possible that this could extend out for perhaps 600 years. But that was said in 1981, and I don't think that's true now. I do think this is probably, if it's not our last one, it's probably next to our last one in this realm. And that there's this unprecedented thing that's happening. And most of us don't know this. Now, those of you that are coming into this line and paying attention to my work are probably putting that together. Well, most people don't have a clue. And this is just another lifetime. And in another culture, in a society that's breaking down, in an economy that's breaking down, in a world that has the threat of war and maybe terrible destruction, and people are living, and most people, I would say, do this, and you can't fault them for doing it, because unless they're exposed to the right information, this looks like all there is, this particular lifetime. And so the fact that we exist beyond this lifetime is, how does someone prove that to themselves? They would have to be curious, they'd have to be interested, they'd have to study some information, and maybe they would come to that conclusion. Maybe what they would do is think, well, that's what the Buddhists say, but the Christians say this, and the Muslims say this, and so how it works becomes something that is just a matter of the particular doctrine of a particular religious point of view rather than what is true. Of course, if you are paying attention to the material we're putting out, it's pretty obvious that statistically, for all the circumstances, for all the people that look like people, that reincarnation is the way it works, and this is just one lifetime in many, many lifetimes. So now we're learning to add these new energies to our experience. Because when we talk about our energies going from one lifetime to another, we think of us and who are we? Who is that energy? Well, in all the Ra stuff they talk about, it's all one. It's just one energy. You're me. I'm you. Ra's us. The Elohim is us. And when you start to actually assimilate that, incorporate that, live as if that's true, and you can sense it, you now have a transformation happen in your daily life. Because you start to incorporate the idea that you're immortal. Even immortal is a funny word because it means living forever, but since time is an illusion, so is the opposite just as true. Living forever and not living at all. But since we're in the illusion, and since we like the idea of existing, then within the illusion, we exist forever. And this is one lifetime as part of a long stream of forevers. So, all of that being taken into consideration, it doesn't absolve us one bit from being right in the moment and being right here. In other words, the fact that you live forever doesn't stop, you know, alleviate the need to earn a living, to eat, to feel nurtured, to feel close to other people, to have friends. So here we are having it all at one time in one moment. We've got to both ground ourselves in this realm that we're existing in, and we also have to tap in to our immortality of being eternal divine beings that go on forever and ever. And you have to do that not in your mind, but in your being. If you do it in your mind, it's just an idea. If you do it in your being, it's yours. Did I hear Terry on the line? Terry is not on the line. Okay, for those of you that are tuning in, Terry usually is at work, and she leaves work and goes across the street into the McDonald's parking lot and oftentimes joins me as kind of a co-host here on our Monday night call. Now, how can one know this is true? How can one know? Well, in my case, I had this really unusual experience of ongoing communications, intelligent communications, with voices, intelligences in other dimensions. And so, me being the curious guy that I am, I've had the opportunity to ask and dialogue and find out their point of view and how we look to them over a number of years, and have this very consistent, coherent body of information that constantly affirms to me that that's the way it is. Now, it's a little bit uncomfortable knowing this, because you're suddenly in the position of knowing something that almost nobody knows or is sure of or can validate. And yet, just as you, when you open the front door, you see your block, it's been so consistent for me that I have no other choice but to validate it. Do I hear Terry on the line?
Yeah, I was on the line before, but I was muted and I couldn't get back in without calling in.
I see. Okay. You couldn't unmute yourself?
No, you can't unmute yourself if you have people muted.
I see. Okay. So, Terry is one of those people that has been a voice for these other realms. And she also happens to be a person that spent a lot of her own life investigating and studying her own, what she calls track, which is her own past lives. So you have an unusual memory of your past lives, don't you, Terry?
Yes, I can remember a lifetime after lifetime what I was doing and where I was.
So would you like to share with our listening audience some of the things you've been doing?
All right. In my last life, I lived in, I was born in Scotland, went to school in Scotland, then I moved to London, and I studied with the ballet, and I danced with the London Ballet, and then I went from there. Later on, I started a family, and I moved to Wales. And I died about, I started going through the Depression and died about 1933. In the lifetime before that, I lived in New York.
Terry?
Yeah.
Should we tell them the sordid details of your death or leave that out?
No, we can leave it out.
Okay, we'll go into it next week or the week after. But it's very interesting. I'll say one thing about it. Terry had a death where someone killed her. And it's like one of her consistent issues is the memory of where, was it a knife went into her body, because it's kind of like her etheric body still remembers that and goes into shock about it. And, you know, it's interesting because it's one of those things that most people probably have those kinds of memories in their body of one sort or another, but they don't have the memory of the particular lifetime or how it actually got started. And you want to make a comment about that? Because I think the actual details are not completely important, but the fact that you had to cope with the memory of that death is kind of an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of riveted me to certain things that happened. For instance, when I was dying, people were screaming that it was my fault, something was my fault. And so anytime somebody gets really upset with me or angry with me, I just panic and I feel like I've got a knife in the back, and I keep hearing the words I said at the time, which was, I didn't do anything wrong. Take me to the hospital. And so when people get upset with me, just this whole incident keys in and triggers, and to the point of, like I was taken to the ocean and rocks dropped on me, and I could feel these rocks dropping on me, and it's like the whole thing, I can feel it. I sense with other people, like if they have an area of craziness in their life where something triggers and then they have an illogical reaction, I think something similar that's set off by some past life that's been very, very traumatic, in the way that the person died. And then it creates all of those triggers at the time. Just really set in. And so the person becomes illogical when some of those things trigger, because it's set the person so much into that incident until one can let it go. And sometimes it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger as one gets more perceptive and sees more about it. And if they keep on going, eventually it should lessen and not have them in the grips of it anymore.
So the memory of that had to be not in your physical body, in your energy body, right?
Yeah. It's not in this physical body, but this physical body is affected by it. It's as if there's a matrix that travels, that I'm conformed into, and it travels with me, and it is affected by the things that happen to me. Very often when a person has an injury in a past life and then moves into the current life, they may have a birth defect or some kind of a mark on the area where that happened to them.
Hey, why do you think that you can remember those lifetimes when most people can't?
Well, I didn't used to remember the lifetimes. I read a very important passage by Gurdjieff, who was a mystic in the Mideast, and wrote some important documents and books. And he indicated that a person could remember their past track. And the way they would do it would be, it would come in little flashes or little pictures or maybe parts of dreams. And then as the individual would see more little parts of it, little past incidents from a past life, it would start to fill in the gaps between the pieces. And they would gradually remember more and more and more until, like for me, it's almost a continuous memory. So that it's like my memory of this life. And like I would remember going to a fair with a neighbor when I was a kid. I've got this memory, and I've got pictures in my mind, and I can remember what was said. Well, eventually, as the little pieces come together from the past, it becomes a continuous memory with the going back to the birth, and then going back to the in-between lives, and then going back to the death, and going back to what happened in that last life. It becomes a memory. Very often, little kids will remember, and they might say things like, you know, last life I lived with another family. When then they get a little older, and they let the memory of it go.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just curious.
It can be recovered.
Before we talk about any of your other memories, maybe somebody on the line has an experience where they remember their past life. And I'll open up the lines and see if anyone has anything, if they've ever had a regression or an experience of that. Let me know.
All callers are unmuted.
Okay, the lines are unmuted. And anyone have an experience in this area that they want to share?
Well, this is Emmy.
Hi, Emmy.
About 20 years ago, I decided to try a regression. And what happened in that regression was, in a way, was very little, but in another way, it did make sense. I saw myself, like, on a beach, water and land, and I looked down at myself, and I could see that I had those wooden shoes on, like they have in Holland. And I had an outfit on that fitted to that time. And behind me were my parents, which I didn't see. So that was one part of it. Then my second thing that really hit home was I came here to Arizona for health reasons. And after I was here 1 year to the day, my first husband died, and I had three little children. So I was very upset about that I had to be here, and I was very anti-Southwest. And in that regression, that man said to me, he said, you know, he said, you have an animosity towards the Southwest, and I want to help you to get over that. He said, the reason for it is that in your last lifetime, you came across the country with horse and wagon, and you were killed at that time by an Indian. You were hit with a bow and arrow, and that arrow entered your heart. And that is why you brought that resentment with you towards the Southwest. So, I don't know. That was my experience.
That's pretty interesting. So did that bow and arrow hit you in Arizona or one of the cities or one of the states?
Excuse me?
What state was that past life in, if you remember, with the Indians?
I don't remember. They said to me it was Arizona.
That's what
that's
I said.
That's why I came with such a resentment. Mm. And I always felt my resentment was because my husband died and I had three little kids, and I really didn't want to be there if it wasn't for my health.
Mm-hmm.
But I can honestly say, knowing that, it helped me. And I no longer have a resentment towards the Southwest.
Well, thanks much for sharing that. Does anyone else have an experience that they remember or had a regression of that they want to share?
Would you consider somebody telling you what your past life was a regression, or you actually have to regress yourself?
We don't have rules here. I mean, somebody.
I had someone who was in a trance tell me, I've always been really interested in astrology. And this person told me that I had lived in London, and it was a very elaborate story. I had lived in London, and I was an opera singer, and I became the head of the company. And I was also into astrology then as well, but I used it to manipulate people.
Now, is this Beth?
Yeah, this is Beth.
I'm just making sure I know your voice. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right.
No, so that was it. So I guess I've always been fascinated with astrology, and they said that, well, you know, yes, that's natural progression from your past lifetime, but in that lifetime, you were so good at what you did that you knew everybody's weak point, and you manipulated them with your knowledge of astrology. So that was what they told me. I mean, so that was kind of interesting.
All right. Maybe you knew Terry.
I was thinking that when she said that. How funny.
Terry, were you in England or New York?
In my last life, I was in England.
Okay. Well, God, you could have been.
So I was the opera singer, and she was the ballerina. So there you go.
I could have known you.
Yeah, we could have run in the same circles. Yeah, you said you look very familiar to me, so maybe that's why.
Familiar to me too.
Yeah.
I wish I remembered the number for BBS, because I suggest if someone's listening and they want to call in, they could. But I don't remember the number for BBS. So if you're on the homepage of BBS and listening on the internet, and you see their phone number, feel free to call. And if you have a story of some recollection of one of your past lives, okay?
I have one.
Now, who is that?
This is Celeste.
Hi, Celeste. Go ahead. Tell us.
Hi. Actually, I have two. One's funny. It's a quickie. And then the other one is when I was a priest in Greece, and my job was to take care of the oracle. And back then, I did a little research after, this was through hypnosis, this was revealed, but I've been told it several different times in different venues, and as in hypnosis, I got on an elevator and went down, got out. I was there on the coast, and I looked. The guide said to me, "Look down, and what do you have on?" And I had on these sandals and this long white robe. Well, my job was to take care of the oracle, which were the young girls in the village. And the way that they became oracles is there were fissures in the mountain. We were in like a cave, and the gases exuded from these cracks, and we would hold these women over the cracks, and they would go into a kind of an epileptic seizure, and they would start babbling, and then we'd write down what they said, and that was the big deal. That's how that particular time got their psychics.
Hey, Terry, and we have to try that with Terry.
I mean, I feel really, I could just put myself into that really, really easily. And when I had a past life reading years and years ago, I was told about that life, and then through hypnosis I went back. But the funny one is I was an African man in Africa, and I had three wives. And they were a pain in the butt. And they were wanting this, wanting that, doing that. You know, they just ran me ragged. And so I prayed to God that I could be freed from this. Well, the leader of the tribe we were part of sent me over to the next village. And you had to go through, I could just see the rocks just as clear as can be. Had to go across this kind of rocky area to get to the next village. And I was just glad to be out of their range and my wife's range, and there was this Black Panther. Well, I just love Black Panthers to this day. In my high school were the Black Panthers, and I'm just drawn to that. I have a black cat that kind of reminds me of a Black Panther. But anyway, it was crouching, and when I came through the cracks in the rocks, it pounced on me, and I can just feel its teeth going into my neck and me singing for joy that I was released. So that one I really can relate to.
Well, that's great. Win? Hello?
It reminds me of my days in Berkeley.
Oh, okay.
You remember the Black Panthers?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a different kind of Black Panthers.
There was a militant group called the Black Panthers, who were kind of a radical black group that was, I can't remember, there's a famous guy. It wasn't Huey Newton.
Oh, yeah. Huey, no.
Huey somebody. And
Tommy Newton.
Malcolm X.
Not Malcolm X. He was, I think he was, I can't remember, but this is off topic, so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Celeste, for sharing. Anyone else have one they want to share?
Lynn?
Yeah.
Yes. This is Maya, and for years, whenever anybody asked me about whether if I have past life memories, I would say no. When I had actually a picture in my mind, just one photographic picture, and because it's a returning picture, I assume that it is, might be a memory. And that is sitting in the Himalayas as an old man in a red dress and dying. You know, like what old people do, they go to the Himalayas and they just die. That's all the picture I have. And also, when I have received my name as an inspiration, Maya, I assume that that also comes from a past life. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for sharing. And but I didn't know Himalayan men wore dresses. Is that like part of the culture? Or was that your own little quirk?
It is not like a dress, but you know this gown, a red gown I was wearing. But it was pretty nicely made. Fancy.
Okay. All right, thank you. Anyone else have one they'd like to share? All right. I should share one. I actually, you guys may have heard this. Some of you heard this story. But this was an extraordinary story because about 30 years ago, somebody introduced me to a guy that they said could do readings like Edgar Cayce. And, of course, I had been very influenced by Edgar Cayce, so I got a reading from this person. And they told me this very detailed story of a past life that I had lived and that I was duplicating a lot of patterns this lifetime. And at that time when I had that reading, I was writing music and I was traveling around from city to city and playing at colleges and coffee shops and whatever. And they told me that I was a troubadour in England 1,000 years ago, and that I would go from town to town and carry the news from one town to the next, and that when I would get the approval of the lord of a certain town, that person would give me a swatch of their royal fabric, which would end up being like a credit card for that town. So people would put me up, women would throw themselves at me, and I was having this really, the way he described it was that it's like if someone slept with me and I wrote a poem about them, it was a great honor, and they would get married usually very quickly thereafter. So I was probably having a lot of fun in England, and I met this one woman who I was really interested in, and she was a lady in waiting, and I couldn't get the approval of the guy who was the lord that she was the lady of waiting in. So I would make up stories to try to make myself more important to him, so he would give me his royal fabric, and I could have this woman. So apparently I was exaggerating the stories and that I couldn't get his approval, and she and I arranged to have a secret meeting at this inn on the way out of town. And so they found out she was going to meet me, and they locked her in her room, and I went to the inn and I met this group of soldiers. And they were meeting a group of soldiers from the other town, and they were talking about me, and they caught me in my lies, or my extensions of the truth that I had told the Lord, and they decided to teach me a lesson. So they stripped me with their swords of all my swatches of royal material, and kind of humiliated me, and I was staying at the inn, and apparently I went into the inn, and I didn't have any clothes on, and I ended up, I guess I put some clothes on before I sat down and I got some tea. And the guy who was the innkeeper was really angry with me because I had humiliated him. And he decided to do away with me, and he gave me hemlock, okay? And that was it for that lifetime. Well, you know, that's a pretty wild story, and I remember thinking, could that be true? And then the guy who told me the story said that the woman who was the lady-in-waiting was my girlfriend at that time, in current time, 30 years ago, and that the innkeeper was my father. And because he took my life, he had to give me life. Or he had the option. I had the option to collect the life from him. And his wife was, the innkeeper's wife was my mother, and my sister was their daughter. And so I started thinking of all these little quirky things that happened to me in my life. Like, for example, when I was in high school, I hated to get undressed in a locker room. And I said, what's the matter with me? Everyone does this. Well, I realized when they told me the story that subconsciously I remembered being naked and humiliated, and it carried through as a memory. And then I was brought up in a Jewish family, and one day I came home from Hebrew school, and I asked my mother if she koshered her meat. And that's like a way of taking the blood out and buying it from a certain butcher. And she said she didn't. And so I said, I'm not going to eat it unless it's kosher. My father shoved the food down my throat, and I spit it out. And this was when I was in high school. For the next 2 or 3 years, they took me to a shrink. They thought I was nuts. But in the next 2 or 3 years, I told my mother, I'm not eating any meat unless it's kosher. And I won. She had to kosher her meat. My father had to bite his tongue. And I realized when I looked back at that, you know, I didn't believe it even in what I was asking for, because I would leave my home and I would go eat hamburgers at McDonald's. So it's not like I took it seriously. Subconsciously, I was getting back at my father for poisoning me. And so I had one more thing that happened that absolutely convinced me that that story was true, and that was that I had written a song 6 years or 7 years before this guy told me that story. And in that song, I told the same that he told me. But I didn't know it was about me. I thought I was writing it from my imagination. And I remember writing the song. I was in Berkeley, and I was in a room. And I think in those days, we were smoking marijuana, and I was spaced out, and these words started coming through my mind, and I started writing them on a piece of paper. And I said, where the heck did this come from? It was a story about... started out, the song went, in the corners of time are the ladies who wait with their sleek silver smiles polished on. And on the edges of time are the poets who watch and freeze their sleek smiles into rhyme. And then it went on talking about this woman that was locked in her room and never got out, and there was a jeering crowd, and then suddenly the guy who was the song was dead. And I even had an image that even suggested reincarnation. So that reading, and particularly the song, just convinced me that reincarnation had to be real, that there was no other possibility, because the song was so specific to that particular lifetime. So let me see if anyone else has one they want to share. Anyone else have anything in this area that they'd like to share?
I just remember something that I forgot to mention listening here and thanking Emmy, that I, from small on, I loved horses from the bottom of my heart. Today, I'm in my 70s. I love horses. I go riding 5 days a week. And that kind of fits in. If I came by horse and wagon, I must have loved the horses.
Okay. All right. How about you, Terry? You know, you remember all your past lives, but you don't remember the one that we'd probably draw on most, which they told us. Some of you don't know this, but I'll share it, that at one point, this was about 4 years ago, I asked in a channeling, I said, so was Terry ever anybody famous? And they said to look up St. Catherine of Siena. And I looked up St. Catherine, and Terry was the spitting image of St. Catherine. And that St. Catherine would go down to the local monastery, and the other nuns would write down everything she said, because they thought God was speaking through her. And so, if that's all true, Terry has done this kind of role in the past. But this is a lifetime you didn't remember, right?
No, I at the time, I didn't, when it was told to me. I didn't remember it, but it jives with dreams that I've had of being able to walk down the stairs, levitating, walk on air, because St. Catherine used to walk down the stairs levitating, and her mother would get very concerned that she'd have an accident and fall. And St. Catherine would always say, the angels are carrying me down the stairs. And I remember the stone pattern in the street side, walking to the monastery. And that's how the memories start, like flashes of this and flashes of that. And then the memories get broader.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some of the positions that she took were similar to positions that I've taken or I've thought I should take in my life.
The positions that she took?
The positions, like not wanting to get married. She didn't want to get married because she didn't want to become too attached in this realm.
Mm-hmm. Guess what? It's time for BBS to be over. Those of you that are listening on BBS, we're going to do our silent meditation. You're welcome to call us at 218-936-1100. The PIN is 37525#, and join us. And for the rest of you on BBS, we're going to say good night. Thanks for listening. This was an unusual show. We never did one like this before. Thank you, everyone who was on the line that contributed your own experience. And those of you that are listening, if you're not subscribed to Message a Day, go to messageaday.net and get a message from the other realms single day. And, okay, so what I'll do is I'll just call in the light, and after I do that, we'll let them say hello. They like to say hello, and we'd like to hear from them. And are you in a comfortable place to let them say hello, Terry?
I'm in the parking lot here, but I'm not in a really comfortable place right here.
Well, okay, let's just bring their energy in, and we won't do a channeling part of this, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes we do, oftentimes. Terry was channeling yesterday, both in the morning at our grid healing and in the afternoon, in the evening at our talk. So when she does that, she gets really, how do you get? You get really tired afterwards. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like being at a different frequency, and it moves my whole body to a different frequency, and then it, I have to reground and kind of move back into the flow of everything around me when I come back.
Okay, so we'll just do a silent meditation. And right now, we're just going to...
All callers are muted.
Bring all our spirits together. Create an energy of oneness and connection. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here and any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy it's radiating from the center of our galaxy through our bodies to the center of the Earth. And right now we invoke, for all of you who willingly agree to participate, a blending of our energies. A coming together of the parts of ourselves that are not in this realm, that are in other dimensions. And we invite those group energies that we've identified as the Elohim group and the Ra group to join with us. And we'll take a moment of silent connection and them and the universe.